The white cat awoke from its private ledge in the forge when it heard the sounds coming from the darkest corner. Smith had carefully shut the big doors behind him when he went off with the nearly hysterical boys, and the cat watched with interest as a thin shadow prodded at the lock and tested the hinges. The doors were oak, hardened by heat and time, but that didn't prevent them being blown right across the street. Smith heard a sound in the sky as he hurried along the track. So did Granny. It was a determined whirring sound, like the flight of geese, and the snow clouds boiled and twisted as it passed. The wolves heard it too as it spun low over the treetops and hurtled down into the clearing. But they heard it far too late. Granny Weatherwax didn't have to follow the footprints now. She aimed herself for the distant flashes of weird light, the strange swishing and thumping and the howls of pain and terror. A couple of wolves bolted past her with their ears flattened in grim determination to have it away on their paws no matter what stood in their way. There was the crackle of breaking branches. Something big and heavy landed in a fir tree by Granny and crashed, whimpering into the snow. Another wolf passed her in a flat trajectory at about head height and bounced off a tree trunk. There was silence. Granny pushed her way between the snow-covered branches. She could see that the snow was flattened in a white circle. A few wolves lay at its edges, either dead or wisely deciding to make no move. The staff stood upright in the snow, and Granny got the feeling it was turning to face her as she walked carefully past it. There was also a small heap in the centre of the circle, curled tightly up inside itself. Granny knelt down with some effort and reached out gently. The staff moved. It was little more than a tremble, but her hand stopped just before it touched Esk's shoulder. Granny glared up at the wooden carvings and dared it to move again. The air thickened. Then the staff seemed to back away while not moving, while at the same time something quite indefinable made it absolutely clear to the old witch that as far as the staff was concerned, this wasn't a defeat, it was merely a tactical consideration, and it wouldn't like her to think she had won in any way, because she hadn't. Esk gave a shudder. Granny patted her vaguely. "It's me, little one. It's only old Granny." The hump didn't uncurl. Granny bit her lip. She was never quite certain about children. Thinking of them, when she thought about them at all, as coming somewhere between animals and people. She understood babies. You put milk in one end and kept the other end as clean as possible. Adults were even easier because they did the feeding and cleaning themselves. But in between was a world of experience that she had never really inquired about. As far as she was aware, you just try to stop them catching anything fatal and hope that it would all turn out all right. Granny, in fact, was at a loss. But she knew she had to do something.
"Did a nasty wolfie frighten us, then?"
she hazarded. For quite the wrong reasons, this seemed to work. From the depths of the ball, a muffled voice said, "I am 8, you know." "People who are 8 don't curl up in the middle of the snow," said Granny, feeling her way through the intricacies of adult-child conversation. The ball didn't answer. "I've probably got some milk and biscuits at home," Granny ventured. There was no perceptible effect.
"Eskerina Smith, if you don't behave this minute, I will give you such a smack."
Esk poked her head out cautiously.
"There's no need to be like that," she said.
When Smith reached the cottage, Granny had just arrived, leading Esk by the hand. The boys peered around from behind him. Said Smith, not quite aware of how to begin a conversation with someone who was supposed to be dead.
They told me you were ill?"
He turned and glared at his sons.
"I was just having a rest, and I must have dozed off. I sleep very sound."
"Yes," said Smith,
uncertainly.
Well, all's well then. What's up with Esk?
She took a bit of a fright, said Granny, squeezing the girl's hand. Shadows and whatnot. She needs a good warm. I was going to put her in my bed. She's a bit mazed, if that's all right with you.
Smith wasn't absolutely sure that it was all right with him, but he was quite sure that his wife, like every other woman in the village, held Granny Weatherwax in solemn regard, even in awe, and that if he started to object, he would rapidly get out of his depth.
Fine, fine, he said. If it's no trouble, I'll send along for in the morning, shall I?
That's right, said Granny. I'd invite you in, but there's me without a fire.
No, no, that's all right, said Smith hurriedly. I've got my supper waiting, drying up, he added, looking down at Gulter, who opened his mouth to say something and wisely thought better of it.
When they had gone, with the sound of the two boys' protests ringing out among the trees, Granny opened the door, pushed Esk inside, and bolted it behind them. She took a couple of candles from her store above the dresser and lit them. Then she pulled some old but serviceable wool blankets, still smelling of anti-moth herbs, from an old chest, wrapped Esk in them, and sat her in the rocking chair. She got down on her knees, to an accompaniment of clicks and grunts, and started to lay the fire. It was a complicated business, involving dry fungus punk, wood shavings, bits of split twig, and much puffing and swearing. Esk said,
"You don't have to do it like that, Granny."
Granny stiffened and looked at the fire back. It was a rather nice one Smith had cast for her years ago, with an owl and bat motif. Currently, though, she wasn't interested in the design.
"Oh, yes," she said, her voice dead level. "You know of a better way, do you?" "You could magic it alight."
Granny paid great attention to arranging bits of twig on the reluctant flames.
"How would I do that, pray?" she said, apparently addressing her remarks to the fire back.
Said Esk, I can't remember. But you must know anyway, don't you? Everyone knows you can do magic."
"There's magic," said Granny. "And then again, there's magic. The important thing, my girl, is to know what magic is for and what it isn't for. And you can take it from me, it was never intended for lighting fires. You can be absolutely certain of that. If the Creator had meant us to use magic for lighting fires, then he wouldn't have given us matches.
"But could you light a fire with magic?" said Esk, as Granny slung an ancient black kettle on its hook. "I mean, if you wanted to, if it was allowed."
"Maybe," said Granny, who couldn't. Fire had no mind, it wasn't alive, and they were two of the three reasons.
"You could light it much better."
"If a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing badly," said Granny, fleeing into aphorisms, the last refuge of an adult under siege. "Yes, but me no buts."
Granny rummaged in a dark wooden box on the dresser. She prided herself on her unrivalled knowledge of the properties of Ramtop's herbage. None knew better than she the many uses of earwort, maiden's wish, and love lies oozing, but there were times when she had to resort to her small stock of jealously traded and carefully hoarded medicines from foreign parts, which, as far as she was concerned, was anywhere further than a day's journey to achieve the desired effect. She shredded some dry red leaves into a mug, topped it up with honey and hot water from the kettle, and pushed it into Esk's hands. Then she put a large round stone under the grate. Later on, wrapped in a scrap of blanket, it would make a bed warmer, and, with a stern injunction to the girl not to stir from the chair, went out into the scullery. Esk drummed her heels on the chair legs and sipped the drink. It had a strange peppery taste. She wondered what it was. She'd tasted Granny's brews before, of course, with a greater or lesser amount of honey in them, depending on whether she thought you were making too much of a fuss. And Esk knew that she was famous throughout the mountains for special potions for illnesses that her mother, and some young women too once in a while, just hinted at with raised eyebrows and lowered voices. When Granny came back, she was asleep. She didn't remember being put to bed, or Granny bolting the windows. Granny Weatherwax went back downstairs and pulled her rocking chair closer to the fire. There was something there, she told herself, lurking away in the child's mind. She didn't like to think about what it was, but she remembered what had happened to the wolves, and all that about lighting fires with magic. Wizards did that. It was one of the first things they learned. Granny sighed. There was only one way to be sure, and she was getting rather old for this sort of thing. She picked up the candle and went out through the scullery into the lean-to that housed her goats. They watched her without fear, each sitting in its pen like a furry blob, three mouths working rhythmically on the day's hay. The air smelled warm and slightly flatulent. Up in the rafters was a small owl, one of a number of creatures who found that living with Granny was worth the occasional inconvenience. It came to her hand at a word, and she stroked its bullet head thoughtfully as she looked for somewhere comfortable to lie. A pile of hay it would have to be. She blew out the candle and lay back with the owl perched on her finger. The goats chewed, burped, and swallowed their way through their cosy night. They made the only sound in the building. Granny's body stilled. The owl felt her enter its mind and graciously made room. Granny knew she would regret this. Borrowing twice in one day would leave her good for nothing in the morning, and with a terrible desire to eat mice. Of course, when she was younger, she thought nothing of it, running with the stags, hunting with the foxes, learning the strange dark ways of the moles, hardly spending a night in her own body. But it was getting harder now, especially coming back. Maybe the time would come when she couldn't get back. Maybe the body back home would be so much dead flesh, and maybe that wouldn't be such a bad way of it at that. This was the sort of thing wizards could never know. If it occurred to them to enter a creature's mind, they'd do it like a thief. Not out of wickedness, but because it simply wouldn't occur to them to do it any other way, the daft buggers. And what good would it do to take over an owl's body? You couldn't fly. You needed to spend a lifetime learning. But the gentle way was to ride in its mind, steering it as gently as a breeze stirs a leaf. The owl stirred, fluttered up onto the little windowsill, and glided silently into the night. The clouds had cleared, and the thin moon made the mountains gleam. Granny peered out through owl eyes as she sped silently between the ranks of trees. This was the only way to travel, once a body had the way of it. She liked borrowing birds best of all, using them to explore the high, hidden valleys where no one went, the secret lakes between black cliffs, the tiny walled fields on the scraps of flat ground tucked on the sheer rock faces that were the property of hidden and secretive beings. Once she had ridden with the geese that passed over the mountains every spring and autumn and had got the shock of her life when she nearly went beyond range of returning. The owl broke out of the forest and skimmed across the rooftops of the village, alighting in a shower of snow on the biggest apple tree in Smith's orchard. It was heavy with mistletoe. She knew she was right as soon as her claws touched the bark. The tree resented her. She could feel it trying to push her away. I'm not going, she thought. In the silence of the night, the tree said, Bully me then, just because I'm a tree. Typical woman. At least you're useful now, thought Granny. Better a tree than a wizard, eh? It's not such a bad life, thought the tree. Sun, fresh air, time to think. Bees, too, in the spring. There was something lascivious about the way the tree said bees that quite put Granny, who had several hives, off the idea of honey. It was like being reminded that eggs were unborn chickens. I've come about the girl, Esk, she hissed. A promising child, thought the tree. I'm watching her with interest. She likes apples, too. You beast, said Granny, shocked. What did I say? Pardon me for not breathing, I'm sure. Granny sidled closer to the trunk. You must let her go, she thought. The magic is starting to come through. Already? I'm impressed, said the tree.
It's the wrong sort of magic, screeched Granny. It's wizard magic, not women's magic. She doesn't know what it is yet, but it killed a dozen wolves tonight. Great, said the tree. Granny hooted with rage. Great! Supposing she had been arguing with her brothers and lost her temper, eh?
The tree shrugged. Snowflakes cascaded from its branches. Then you must train her, it said.
Train? What do I know from training wizards?
Then send her to university.
She's female,
hooted Granny, bouncing up and down on her branch. Well, who says women can't be wizards? Granny hesitated. The tree might as well have asked why fish couldn't be birds. She drew a deep breath and started to speak, and stopped. She knew a cutting, incisive, withering, and above all a self-evident answer existed. It was just that, to her extreme annoyance, she couldn't quite bring it to mind.
Women have never been wizards. It's against nature. You might as well say that witches can be men.
If you define a witch as one who worships the pancreative urge, that is, venerates the basic, the tree began, and continued for several minutes. Granny Weatherwax listened in impatient annoyance to phrases like mother goddesses and primitive moon worship, and told herself that she was well aware of what being a witch was all about. It was about herbs and curses and flying around of nights and generally keeping on the right side of tradition, and it certainly didn't involve mixing with goddesses, mothers or otherwise, who apparently got up to some very questionable tricks.
And when the tree started talking about dancing naked, she tried not to listen, because although she was aware that somewhere under her complicated strata of vests and petticoats there was some skin, that didn't mean to say she approved of it.
The tree finished its monologue. Granny waited until she was quite sure that it wasn't going to add anything, and said, "That's witchcraft, is it?"
"It's theoretical basis, yes."
"You wizards certainly get some funny ideas."
The tree said,
"Not a wizard anymore, just a tree."
Granny ruffled her feathers.
"Just you listen to me, Mr. So-called theoretical basis tree. If women were meant to be wizards, they'd be able to grow long white beards, and she is not going to be a wizard. Is that quite clear? Wizardry is not the way to use magic. Do you hear? It's nothing but lights and fire and meddling with power, and she'll be having no part of it. And good night to you."
The owl swooped away from the branch. It was only because it would interfere with the flying that Granny wasn't shaking with rage.
Wizards. They talked too much and pinned spells down in books like butterflies, but worst of all, they thought theirs was the only magic worth practicing.
Granny was absolutely certain of one thing. Women had never been wizards, and they weren't about to start now.